It's time for Supply Chain Now Radio, sponsored by Apex Atlanta and Talent Stream. Broadcasting live from the supply chain capital of the country, Atlanta, Georgia, Supply Chain Now Radio spotlights the best in all things supply chain. The people, the companies, the technologies, the best practices, and the critical issues of the day. Now, here are your hosts.
All right. Good morning. Scott Luton here with you at Supply Chain Now Radio. Glad to be back to work this morning with our second show of the week. Yesterday, we enjoyed a fantastic discussion with leaders from SAP Ariba, Risk Connect, and the Blockchain Chamber of Commerce. Today, we'll be focusing once again on the hashtag Supply Chain City of Atlanta, Georgia. We're going to be speaking with three supply chain leaders from a world-class organization with a significant presence right here in the Metro Atlanta area. But first, let's say good morning to my talented co-hosts, my better halves, Ben Harris, Director of Supply Chain Ecosystem Expansion with the Metro Atlanta Chamber. Good morning, Ben.
Morning, Scott.
Glad you are here, Mr. World Traveler. Will Haraway, Founder and Lead Evangelist with Backbeat Marketing. Hey, Will.
Hey, would that make us your better thirds?
Better thirds, yeah.
Got it?
You know my math skills.
Got it.
Ben and Will, glad to have you both. It's been a busy couple weeks here. And looking forward to hearing more about some of your top things knowing Supply Chain Now in just a moment. But let's focus now on welcoming our featured guest today from Kimberly-Clark. We have Sandra McQuillan, Chief Supply Chain Officer for Kimberly-Clark. How are you, Sandra?
I'm very good, Scott. Thank you.
Good morning. Glad you're here.
Morning.
Claire Ughetto, Director of Supply Chain Strategy and Transformation. Good morning, Claire.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Glad to have you. And Amy Gray, Director of Supply Chain Human Resources. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
All right. Well, we've got, and in case you didn't know, so if you live on this planet, any aliens?
Yeah,
there we go.
Please come forth now.
One-fourth of the world's population uses a Kimberly product every day. That is remarkable. So Huggies, Kleenex, Cottonelle, pull-ups, and many more, you're touching and using a product from Kimberly-Clark every single day, which is crazy. Been in business 146 years. So looking forward to dive more into Kimberly-Clark and the incredible supply chain operations and transformation that you are leading. But first, we are going to talk about a couple of the top things to know in supply chain now. So, Will, we are in the middle of college football season. My Clemson Tigers are 7-0, got a big game against FSU tomorrow.
We've noticed.
So what fuels college football season?
Oh, you mean just the competitive spirit?
No.
And
no,
not just good, you know, pride in your
beer,
alma mater.
Beer, right?
Cold beer.
The proverbial college football tailgate and everything else. So you've got some news on a couple of factors that may...
Disturbing news, okay. Scary news. Okay. In front of Halloween, we do have some news.
Do tell.
Well, you know, this is Supply Chain City, Atlanta, Georgia, but it's also a very big beer city. We've got Sweetwater that kind of started it all over on Armor Drive. You've got Monday Night Brewery and Scofflaw and Three Taverns.
Wow.
So, you know, Supply Chain City does like its beer. But what has been determined just this week that because of climate change, the price of beer could possibly double. Because of agricultural shifts affecting one of beer's main components, barley. So due to an increased likelihood of extreme heat and droughts, barley worldwide, the yields could decrease anywhere up to 17%, sending cost increases rippling down the supply chain. So they are predicting, I'm not sure that I'm agreeing with this, but that worldwide beer consumption will likely drop considerably as well, according to this study by the University of East Anglia in Norwich.
East Anglia in Norwich.
I knew you were going to. I'm so glad you're here. I knew she was going to hook me
very
up.
Very beautiful
with the,
part of the world. So.
Well, there you go. And they're monitoring our beer consumption, which is appreciated.
So that's a good point. I'm not sure. I can't imagine what would trigger the consumption of beer to go down. So we'll kind of see how this plays out. And Will, you're plugged into the International Beer Institute, which monitors cans drank per day, right?
Of course,
okay,
yeah.
So we'll check on that figure when you get back.
We're all doing our part here at Supply Chain Now Radio.
So on that note, as many of y'all know, Anheuser-Busch has a brewery in Cartersville, Georgia, right? It's been operating since 1993. And, you know, to get beer out, you've got to have massive fleets, right? We've all seen plenty of beer trucks on the road. Well, Anheuser-Busch is committing to a zero-emission truck fleet by 2025. Which I thought was pretty neat. They have also purchased, this was a little dated in terms of this purchase, but a lot of Tesla trucks to help accomplish that. So we'll see how that rolls out. But speaking of trucks and transportation, let's bring Ben Harris back into the conversation. Ben, you've got some big news related to a new startup.
Yeah, Convoy Inc., actually a Seattle-based company, just announced that they picked Atlanta as their next operations hub amongst 20 other cities that they were looking at throughout the North America. So very exciting announcement. They're going to employ, he said, hundreds, to quote him, of people over the next 5 years. So we don't have an exact number on how many that is, but I'm guessing it's about 200-300. As with a lot of startups and scaling companies, you really don't know, you know, how much you're going to grow depending on, you know, how much funding you receive and how the business grows. So but a very exciting announcement, though, especially when they looked at so many different cities. And to quote him, it was really about the talent of the region. And I'm sure we'll get really more into that the rest of the episode here. But that was one of the more encouraging things, was the talent and also just the freight market here. Mm-hmm. According to Freight Waves, I think they were saying Atlanta the other day was the number one truck freight market in the U.S. So we always talk about it being top three with Chicago and Dallas. But I think we can finally say it is number one from mm-hmm. a volume standpoint. So
that really is a big deal. I mean, Convoy, I've done some work in the space, as we talked about before. And when Convoy entered the space, it was almost like, here comes the big boy, because they're another association with Atlanta. Mark Benioff is a major investor of Convoy as well. So yep. We talked about that yesterday.
In addition to Salesforce, yeah, who just announced 600 more jobs
right.
in Atlanta. So, yeah, Mark Benioff is a big fan of Atlanta right now.
He
that's
is.
For sure.
He's a big investor.
Who's not?
He's a big investor in Rubicon Global as well, which we talked about yesterday. So,
indeed.
I mean, he's another connection to him coming through Atlanta.
All right. So beer and trucks leading off the show today. Thank you, Will and Ben, for those observations. Y'all were referencing an event yesterday. I think it was the Supply Chain Leadership Council met
yep.
yesterday. Is that right?
It did. It took place yesterday morning. It was the first event that we'd done with the IoT Smart Cities Council as a kind of combined event, if you will. And it was pretty successful. We had, as Will was saying, Rubicon Global.
Yep. David Rachelson.
David mm-hmm. Rachelson, VP of Sustainability there. And he gave a great overview of kind of, you know, what they've done here in Atlanta with the city of Atlanta, a lot of work they've done there, had some great results as far as the amount of waste they've been able to take out of there. And they've really done, most of their business is really global.
Yep.
So we've done, you know, everything in our power to kind of give them as many resources as possible to grow here in Atlanta. And we talk about, you know, the backed by ATL companies here, where there's really these middle market companies that don't get as much attention as the startup and scaling companies out there. And a lot of the, you know, the bigger, the Fortune 500 companies in Atlanta, which were very blessed to have Kimberly-Clark being one of those large companies. But yeah, we really haven't, you know, talked about the middle market as much. So that's really what Backed by ATL is all about, is throwing as many resources as possible to these middle market companies here in Atlanta to help them scale and grow. So very exciting. Very
yeah,
exciting.
Definitely. We'll have to have a dedicated show on that.
We should do a weeks. Backed by ATL episode for
yeah.
sure.
All right. Well, I was bringing that up because I believe, and I'm bringing our featured guest back into the conversation, Sandra McQuillan, Chief Supply Chain Officer with Kimberly-Clark, Claire Ughetto, Director of Supply Chain Strategy and Transformation. We've already established Claire does not get any sleep in that role with Kimberly-Clark. Amy Gray, Director of Supply Chain HR. But Sandra, you also serve as chair of the Metro Chamber's Supply Chain Leadership Council.
She sure
right?
does.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yep. With Ben, we work together.
Terrific. So let's talk. We've got a great conversation teed up today. A big theme is going to be women in leadership, women in supply chain, which is really neat to have heavy hitting team of women leaders doing big things in the industry and in the local industry here today on Supply Chain Radio. But let's first, Sandra, in the warm up conversation, we talked about kind of how y'all view supply chain, because that term's been around a while, even with it's become almost a cliche, but folks still kind of define that differently. How does Kimberly-Clark define supply chain?
Yeah, the way that we define a supply chain is we actually talk about it from source to shelf. So we include procurement, manufacturing, logistics, quality, safety and sustainability in all of that area. And within that comes elements of engineering as well. So we've basically said, right, we're going to own it from the start to when we actually put it on the shelf, be it virtual or real, bricks and mortar or actually e-commerce as well.
Wow. Well, what we wanted to start the conversation today is related to each of your personal journeys to where you are now and what's beyond. So starting with you, Sandra, you know, kind of talk to us about how you came into industry, you know, some of those early challenges you had to break through, the maybe barriers, whatnot. But how did you get here today in the Reader's Digest version?
Okay. I was going to say by car, which would have been really quick, but that's not very helpful for you. So how did I get here? Basically, my dad told me not to do mechanical engineering, so I did, because he was a mechanical engineer and he still is, although he's retired now. So I did an engineering degree and then basically did a year out during that time with Exxon, so Exxon Mobil now, and used some of those skills and learning to work with them. Joined as a graduate there and did, surprisingly enough for those that know me, sales for a while, which was where I decided I was probably better suited to supply chain. And then moved into industrial engineering, business development and other areas, and then moved to become a Martian. So I moved to work for Mars, which most people over here know as M&M Mars.
Okay.
And started there as a shift manager, actually, working, making Snicker bars and Mars bars, which are different in different parts of the world, actually. So I won't try and translate that from English into American. It won't work. And did that for a few years and then moved through with Mars for 21 years nearly. I basically went through all different functions, as I would define them, for supply chain, through various leadership levels, going from managing as a first-line manager right the way through to managing at a very senior level and being on an executive leadership team. Was very fortunate to marry an amazing man who was quite happy to stop working his career through, having been very successful in that, and follow me around the world, actually. So we went from the UK to the Czech Republic, where he and I had our son Jack 16 years ago, and then moved from the Czech Republic to Russia and lived for 3 years in Russia and covered the CIS as it was then. Then from Russia to the Middle East to Belgium, and then Belgium to North America. So I would say, how did I get here? Via a very convoluted route, to be honest. But one where, if you talk about diversity, one where, you know, apart from gender diversity, culture, experience, knowledge, respect for other parts of the world and other organizations and how things happen, really became part of my diversity learning. And then I had a call, actually, from a headhunter who... it was a prank. Bless you. So that was a sneeze, not me blessing everybody, just in case you were worried.
We do appreciate
that too.
Bless you all, yes. I had a call from a headhunter who was looking to fill a position that Kimberly Clark were bringing in brand new in 2015, which was the Chief Supply Chain Officer. And surprisingly enough, for a company of our size, we hadn't actually had a supply chain organization. And in 2015, the board and Tom Falk, our CEO, decided that they wanted to do that. And I wasn't going to leave Mars because I'd had an amazing time there. It's a great place with a great company with great principles. But it's not often you get a chance to create something from new. So I basically took a jump with my family as well, and they were very much part of that decision. And we came to North America to start the supply chain for Kimberly Clark, which has been amazing because you're going to talk to two other incredibly talented women who are part of that. So.
Yes. And on that note, we'll circle back to the huge transformation that you and your team have been leading. But Claire, we were talking in the warm-up. You've had a pretty neat experience of being able to serve beside Sandra for a number of years. Tell us about your journey to getting here and to these sleepless nights that we're kind of.
Can I just say that's not my fault?
I don't know where that came from.
We're kind of kidding. We're kind of kidding. But Claire, tell us about your personal journey.
I went to Georgia Tech here in Atlanta and studied industrial engineering. So it's a great warm up to supply chain as you get to. You know, in studying, I had exposure to all different parts of the supply chain and was really interested in getting into it. So I also am a former Martian and had about a 20-year supply chain career with Mars and really had the privilege of of having a very diverse background in terms of, you know, working from manufacturing, mm-hmm. from factory, right through to customer logistics and sitting in front of, you know, our big customers. So yeah, I've really enjoyed the time there and that diversity of experience. I've known Sandra for about 10 years,
okay.
and had the, you know, the privilege of watching her stand up a global supply chain under Mars. So it was much too tempting to stay away. So really was excited to make the jump and come over to KC to be part of that transformation and part of the journey that we're on now in terms of, you know, going from a much more local or regional based structure to one where we leverage our, you know, the global scale that we have and all of the knowledge that we have around the world.
So let me ask you a question that wasn't on the script, but so you've known Sandra now for about 10 years. What is one trait that has not changed from the first day that you met her? Leadership trait.
A nice
or
one.
Some other.
Okay. Yeah.
No, I have to say that Sandra is an incredibly inspirational leader. And I think that both women and men alike would say the same thing about her. She, like, if I had to, one description I would say is she's very collaborative in terms of, you know, always trying to bring people along and include them in the discussion. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's, you know, it's a trait that has followed her that that was very missed when she left Mars, and that you hear people talk about at KC.
Mm. And that's really not only is that inherent to supply chain today, collaboration and progressive collaboration and creative collaboration, but I would argue it's some of what our business community needs right now, right? Looking for ways, looking for the common ground. We all have differences, and to hear Sandra talk about all the different countries, I can only imagine all the different cultural norms that you experience. But if we look for common ground, business or otherwise, things get a lot easier. Mm. So, which leads me to Amy Gray. So thank you, Claire. I appreciate that. Amy Gray, supply chain HR. We talk about sleepless nights. That is, you know, a lot of organizations.
We have a lot of fun too.
That's right.
We do.
And they do sleep sometimes.
We do sleep.
Yeah.
We do sleep.
So, tough world though. Tough world. You know, a lot of organizations struggling to find talent, whether it's supply chain, manufacturing, otherwise. You know, tell us about how you got here today and what led you to Kimberly-Clark.
Okay, sure. My background's a little bit different than Sandra and Claire's, where I did not come out of engineering. I came out of more of a liberal arts type background in business. I have worked my whole career at Kimberly-Clark and in HR. Most of my career has been spent in a lot of the technical spaces. I worked at many of our manufacturing facilities, in the supply chain space for business units, as well as the research and development side. So lots of my career spent with the technical community. When Sandra decided to come to Kimberly-Clark, I had the fortunate opportunity to be able to partner with her as she built out the supply chain organization at Kimberly-Clark. So it's been a really exciting three years and a bit, yep. I think we've been together, working on the transformation and just really, you know, starting to now think about how we bring the supply chain culture at Kimberly-Clark and really looking at the mix of talent needed to drive us to the future. So lots of great work done so far. Lots of opportunity remains in front of us.
Absolutely. Yes. And as a follow-up, the culture that y'all been establishing at Kimberly-Clark, especially from a supply chain standpoint, what one or two things really stand out about the culture that you've been?
Well, I think, you know, if I think of the principles that Sandra has put in place, that's really been our beacon. So we focus on simplification, which you just spoke about, standardization and collaboration. I think the collaboration piece is the most prominent part that we've been focused on over the last 3 years as we've had to build out this end-to-end supply chain, which up until Sandra joining us, we really didn't have line of sight to an end-to-end supply chain. Our supply chain was fragmented into different functions and reported into different parts of the business. So not only did we have to bring the function together into one identity, we also work in a highly matrixed environment globally. So we have to work across business units and functional barriers that currently exist and really try to unite and create a team.
You know, and one of the things I haven't told you, both of you, Amy and Claire, is that I was in El Salvador yesterday, and our simplification, standardization, and collaboration were all hanging in the mill that I went to visit, which was like, whoa! You know, we're getting there. We're touching everywhere. It's fast.
That's right.
Yeah.
Small
great,
wins.
Great.
Right?
Yeah, huge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Terrific. Well, thank you all for that. So let's move into a big theme that we're going to be talking about today, which is, you know, why diversity is so important. And today is a supply chain conversation, but I know we could all argue how important diversity is across the business community. But Sandra, let's start with you. What makes diversity so important for today's supply chain organization?
I think it's over and above supply chain, actually. I think any organization, Scott, needs diversity, and it's gender diversity, it's cultural diversity, it's difference in your ethnic background. It's also difference, very importantly, in how you think and approach things. Mm. You know, I joke with the team sometimes, I'd love to have a bunch of people who work for me who all said yes every time you walked in through the door. But actually, you don't. You want right. to have the challenge, and you want to have the experience that diversity in any level brings to you, particularly as you look at how the world is evolving now, where we're becoming a lot more data-driven. So being able to take that data and put it through different filters to analyze it and then make a decision on that becomes hugely important. So in its widest sense, if you haven't got it, you're not going to make the decision that's going to take you to the front of the pack.
Right.
You're going to sit at the back and wait
right.
for someone else to go ahead of you.
Mm. What and Claire, Amy, what in your words, what makes diversity and not just not to focus on supply chain, not to focus. I like how you put that, Sandra. Diversity is not just one, you know, one litmus test. It's across the board. Amy, Claire, in your words, what makes it so important?
I think for Kimberly-Clark, we've really taken a focus on diversity for the past decade because we want to be more representative internally to our organization, to what our shoppers and consumers really look like externally. So we want to make sure that we're representing, you know, the female diversity and the female viewpoint, but also, you know, the global diversity that exists. We are a global company, and we want to make sure that we are aligned to the different cultures around the world, and we're relevant to the world. So I think it's important as you build your organization and the talent within the organization, the talent has to really understand who your consumer base is and be representative of that consumer base.
Mm. Yeah, we had what your comments there kind of echo. We had Jack Allen with Cisco in a few months back, and Cisco has made a very big conscientious effort to grow diversity within their organization. And he kind of said, put it like you put it, we want our company and our team members to reflect, you know, the population that we serve and our mm-hmm. customer base and in a global organization. So that's really neat to hear. Claire, any additional thoughts?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I worked a lot of my career in North America, but I also had the privilege to work in a regional team in Europe, right? So had a lot of diversity of culture around the table, and there really, you know, grew to value, you know, how what everyone can bring and the different viewpoints that people bring from cultural backgrounds. So yeah, I would say, you know, it's been amazing to be part of a global team at KC where we do have, you know, folks from around the table sitting there and a high percentage of female diversity as mm. well.
Mm. That's true. And yeah. also country. I mean, we've got people from yep. Argentina, Australia, Asia, mm. yeah, all around the globe that actually sit on the team. And you look at how the conversations shift and the provocations that we bring about. Yeah, it might work over here, but it might not work over here. It actually makes you pause. Mm-hmm. And to the points that both Claire and Amy are making, you come out with a better solution that's more relevant to your customer or your consumer. And both really matter, obviously.
Mm. And we've been kind of approaching this from a what's in it for organizations. But what I'm hearing you all speak to is also the professional development and the personal development mm. that we all gain from having a very diverse team around us, right?
Yeah.
All right. So let's dial in a little bit closer. I like how we started with a broad definition of diversity, because I want to kind of move forward and pinpoint on the gender aspect yep. of diversity, right? So y'all may have seen the same study, Awesome Leadership, which is an organization dedicated to women leadership, partnered with Gartner. Mm-hmm. Oh, let me back up a minute. I'll save that data nugget for later. So McKinsey.
Teasing now, are you?
Yeah, I'm teasing. There we go. So McKinsey came out. They did a study in 2015. Did similar study on 2017. They looked at companies who have who are in the top 25th percentile for women in executive leadership roles, right? Think about if I had that right.
Yeah.
They were 2015, they were 15% more likely to experience above average profits. In 2017, that 15% grew to 21%. So not that it starts and stops with the bottom line, but as we all know, in many offices, it does, right? Elba Prayal Gallagher is on our show on a regular basis. She sets the record. She leads a group called Show Me 50, which is all about equal representation in the boardroom. And she is really she's taught us that it does have to, when we talk about some of these, for lack of a better word, more intangible issues, we do have to show and try to quantify as best we can the impact it can have on the bottom line. Mm-hmm. So let's start there. What any comments around the impacts you've seen in your career when we have more female leaders, mm-hmm, in whether it's supply chain, business executive teams?
Yeah.
Sandra.
So I think the conversation changes in that space because men and women aren't the same, clearly, anatomically, but also in terms of how we approach things. So a lot of the conversations that you can have, if you have the courage to go into that conversation, and I think that can sometimes be a bit of the barrier for women in particular, to have the courage to be able to go into the conversation. You can just bring that thought provocation through a different lens, yeah, that again really does drive bottom and top line growth. And you know, you ask for examples on that, but if I look at what we've been doing in Kimberly-Clark for the last three and a half years, we know that we have added significant amounts of millions of dollars to the bottom line through the work that we've been doing with the supply chain. In terms of how we've improved it, we've gone up by nearly 30% on the traditional level of saving that we used to make, because we're able to bring together. And if you had a bigger space here, Scott, we'd bring the other rest of the women who are in supply chain and the men as well, because they all
next
make
show.
A big difference.
Next
one,
show.
Yeah. You'd actually, that really does generate a different way of doing things. And
absolutely.
And we have some pretty tough conversations that probably we wouldn't, well, I know we wouldn't have if we didn't have that learning difference and that way of approaching things.
You know, that is a common thread, because having the courage to have that conversation, you know, as someone that puts his foot in his mouth on a very almost hourly basis, you know, we're never going to pick the perfect words,
no,
right, and the perfect phrases. And it's not like a sitcom where everything is scripted out and you have the perfect response to the perfect tee up, all that. Just entering in the conversation with, you know, transparently and with intentions to make things better and hear everyone heard. You know, it's interesting. If you can do that, we can break through a lot of issues,
yeah,
that remain oftentimes, unfortunately, kind of under the surface level.
I think there's a really key, for me personally, if it helps the people who are listening, for me personally, I spent many years thinking getting very nervous before I said something or wanting to be absolutely perfect, and probably around self-confidence, self-worth, around what I was going to bring, owning that and then going, it's my story, not somebody else's. Mm-hmm. Just give it a go, make some mistakes. The worst thing is, I don't know what the worst thing is if you don't try, just trying to go out there and do that. You're not going to be perfect, but you're going to make some mistakes on it, but you're going to add some value. And if you're not adding value, somebody hopefully who cares about you will tell you and help you, you know?
Absolutely. And Claire, on that comment, you know, what I heard there is being able to have confidence to assert yourself, your opinion, your expertise, and that you had a kind of a eureka moment, it sounds like, when you became real comfortable doing that. Claire, what about in your background? You know, did you have a similar epiphany, or how did you develop that?
The light shone on you.
Well, yeah, I would say as a young woman working in manufacturing and in supply chain, you know, which, you know, tends to be more male-dominated, in particular in manufacturing. I had a lot of concern of always saying, you know, how do I act more like a male than a female? Mm. And I think only as I got more mature in my career and had role models like Sandra, and actually a lot of men,
yeah,
really strong men leaders, that, you know, really showed the value of that diversity, and that it's more important to be authentic and bring what you think and the way that you deliver it versus trying to be something that you're not, or, you know, to fit in, if you will. So, so, I think that that's, you know, I would say probably something for managers, leaders, and young people to be aware of as they come into the supply chain careers.
Would you agree that in 2018 and the workforce we have here versus previous decades, that the workforce is more savvy on picking up when a leader is not being authentic? Would you?
I think that there's people look at things probably more closely and dissect things a bit more than in the past, right? So. I think it's really important, and people can see through, and if people are not being authentic.
Yep. Agreed. So, next question I want to kind of pose you, Amy. Why do you think the supply chain profession, and not necessarily Kimberly-Clark, but just in general, why is it still struggling to attract, retain, and recognize female talent?
Okay, well, I'd like to start by just saying, in our supply chain at Kimberly-Clark, I think across the different functional areas that Sandra spoke about earlier, procurement, safety, quality, logistics, and manufacturing.
Which I love that definition of supply chain. We need to tout that, because that really, you know, that end-to-end version, that's
that's where the difference comes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Sorry. When I take our manufacturing kind of out of the mix, we're actually quite balanced across the board, at least in female, male diversity. We've spent a lot of time, like I said, the past decade, really focusing on ensuring that we're hiring, developing, retaining, engaging our female talent. So across that functional space, we do see kind of a good balanced mix. Unfortunately, in manufacturing, we have a ways to go. And, you know, I think this is a fundamental issue that we're all grappling with for those who work in supply chain, is just, you know, finding females that are interested in getting educations in the technical spaces. So particularly STEM related fields. It is difficult, and we're actually seeing a decline in people interested in even going into engineering, males and females. So, you know, what does that mean for our future? And really taking a look back at those STEM programs and really promoting the development of, you know, young people as they're thinking about where their careers may lie, if they do have technical inclination, to really encourage them to go into those engineering backgrounds is important. But I think because we predominantly look at how we go after acquiring talent to people with those technical backgrounds, it tends to be a little bit of a difficult push.
Yep.
But
I agree.
We're going to try for some different things.
You got to. You know, I've been at a couple HDCI meetings over the last month or so, High Demand Career Initiative that George has put together to address some of what you talk about, Amy. I can't remember what school district it was, but they have a great strategy where they have STEM meetings, STEM geared meetings, with the goal of not just engaging the student, but also to get the student's parents out so they can fight back certain stigmas that are inaccurate related to engineering, manufacturing, you know, all the STEM related roles. And I'm thinking that is, we got to do a lot more of that, because these students, they're being shaped like all of us here. You know, our mom or dad or parental units, they are our greatest consultant, our guide, our mentor, shaping us to the path we're taking. So if they've got the misconception of what these roles involve, then we've got a lot more heavy lifting to do. But so you've made a lot of progress in the last 10 years, it sounds like, from a supply chain standpoint, almost 50-50, right?
Yeah, pretty close to 50-50 across the board, with the exception of the manufacturing space. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're a little bit more hyper-focused on going forward, to really, really try to address that. And some things we have going on in some of our locations is we're going down into the high schools and looking at, can we do different type of co-op programs with high school students to bring them into the manufacturing environment. I mean, I think there is a misconception that the manufacturing environment is noisy, dirty, you know, and it's not that. It's very clean. It's very safe. It's well lit. It's not dirty.
Opportunities for advancement.
Yep.
Yeah. Lots of opportunities for advancement. And just when you look at supply chain as a whole, we want our supply chain leaders to not just advance through manufacturing, but also take the growth opportunities to move into the other functional areas. Mm. So, you know, starting in a manufacturing environment doesn't necessarily mean ending a career in a manufacturing space, but most supply chain leaders tend to touch on it at some point in their career.
I mean, anecdotally, this is on manufacturing. A lot of people think that when you're working in a plant or factory or a mill, you wear clothing to protect yourself. Actually, you don't. You wear the clothing to protect the product that you're manufacturing.
That's right.
And it's almost this strange shift that we have to make of some of the products that are manufactured are so regulated and so high quality. Yep. Having come from the pet, having worked in the pet industry, and actually some of the products that we make in Kimberly-Clark, we wear the uniform to protect the product, not to protect ourselves.
My beagle Dolly really appreciates that. She's got a regular routine, hand-fed, certain brands. So thank you all for Martians, right? Is that the phrase?
We were Martians. We're now KCers.
Yes. So. KC. Was there, so is there, what's the KCer? Is there any kind of term of endearment for KC employees?
It's KCers. Yeah.
KCer. Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
You
sounds
guys,
simple enough.
And you guys mentioned misconceptions. Kind of another one would be, I feel like in the manufacturing space that, you know, we use the word manufacturing all the time. And it is what it is. It's manufacturing. But at the lower levels of education, I think the word create and things of that nature, that things make and things like that seem to resonate with younger generations a little bit better. They, you know, we've talked about it in previous shows too, Scott, about how that seems to resonate with younger generations. And with your supply chain 101 program, I'm sure that's been one of those words that you guys have started using a little more too.
Amongst others, but yes. Mm. It's interesting what a team of what third and fourth and fifth graders can teach you.
Yeah.
Just when you think you've got it all figured out from a supply chain or manufacturing standpoint. You were going to say something, Sandra?
I was, because the reason I'm in supply chain is because I love creating things and I love working with people. Mm. And those are the two things that I want to make a difference, and I want to make it with people and because I'm creating something. And I think if you really, you know, if that's what you want to do, come on down, because it doesn't matter who you are or what you are. Come on down, because you get that delivered every single day.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Very rewarding. So let's, so you've clearly, KC has made a lot of gains in, especially in supply chain with you know, diversity. What are you doing specifically to attract, and how have you been able to do that? We'll stay focused on the supply chain side. We'll talk more about manufacturing, some of those unique challenges, okay. But what have you been able to do that's really worked?
Yeah, I just mentioned that we're trying to reach out to younger students in the high school age, and we're doing that throughout the world in different locations, and we are seeing some uptick in receptivity in that space. I think at the top of the house, we've really made a shift at Kimberly-Clark because we do, for the past decade, we have put diversity as part, not only part of our corporate metrics, but we tied it to the bonuses of our executives. Mm. So diversity is owned by all of our leaders at Kimberly-Clark. And I do think when you, where you put your money, that's where you get your results, like anything in business.
Amen. Yeah.
So we do have just a few different kind of easy tactics, but it did shift the game. So when we started looking at our directors and above, we said 100% of the slates, when we bring people in to interview, we have to have diversity on the slates, not just female diversity, but we have to have diversity. Now we're starting to see that trickle down lower into the organization, where we expect diversity on every hiring slate. And just having our objectives tied to that, I think we just have really seen a big push. So when we look outside of manufacturing at the rest of the supply chain and we have that 50-50 mix, I mean, it is a healthy result of that focus that we've had for the past 10 years.
Mm. I would just build on what Amy's saying, if I can, because I think the other thing that's really important, it's diversity on the slate, but it's also capability and performance that you have to deliver to get there. So the other thing I would say that we're really good at doing is not compromising on the talent that we bring in, but actually we make sure that we start with a slate or a feed, you know, a pool, excuse me, that represents as much as we can the society that we're operating in, but we never compromise on talent or delivery.
Mm. If I can shift gears a minute and correct me if I'm wrong, Claire, with your role, strategy and transformation you know, the planning that goes into that, maybe the brainstorming, the problem solving, you know, how you assemble that. What do you see when you move into sessions devoted to laying out this strategic plan where there's a healthy mix of diversity? What's gained from that in your experience?
Well, we have, like we talked about, a very diverse leadership team, and that includes different cultural backgrounds, male and female diversity. And, you know, I think we have a lot of strong voices around the table. So I think, you know, I have the privilege of, you know, being in a role where a lot of times I get to bring all of those ideas together. And yeah, that's been amazing. I think what is not always easy.
No.
But not, Sandra said we don't have a group of yes people.
No. Right. But comparing and contrast that today, which is really interesting for an industry that the strides y'all have made in an area where so many organizations are struggling, comparing and contrasting that versus some of your earlier roles 10 or 12 years, 20 years ago, where that wasn't the case. What advantages have you seen in the current state?
I would say that I think now there is, you know, it depends on the leader, but for sure, you know, there's an importance on valuing that diversity and inclusion and making sure that everyone is heard versus we're going to go the direction of what the boss says, right? So I think that's been probably a transition over the last 10 years I've become more and more aware of. And, you know, in my supply chain roles, it's very important because, as Sandra mentioned, I think the more diversity and thought that you have, the better solutions that you come up with. So, you know, in general, everybody wants to do the right thing and get to the right answer. And I think although we have a lot of strong voices in our team, we all want to get to the best solution. Mm-hmm. So people are willing to listen to each other and align on that.
And you can have, it's really important to acknowledge, you can have a team of really strong, passionate voices, but as long as they're all dedicated to making sure everyone around the table that may not be geared the same way is heard and valued, right? You can have both. You can have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
Right? And I guess I would just like to add, like, along the line of inclusion at Kimberly-Clark, we have spent quite a bit of time over the past 3 years investing in the concept of inclusion. Mm-hmm. So not just diversity. In our manufacturing facilities in North America, we've trained about 90% of our frontline leaders, so the managers who manage the employees, on the concept of inclusion. Mm-hmm. And what does that look like? Mm-hmm. And just really helping them understand how to bring the best out of everybody, no matter who it's coming from, so that our teams do feel, you know, everybody feels like they have a place within the team they work.
I guess one of my big, I think that's a great point both Amy and Claire are making here, but I think there's also something, and there's something else in here around your style isn't the only style. So if I look at, you know, I'm quite a big extrovert, so I can find ways of connecting and talking to people. And when I initially discovered an introvert, you think, well, what's wrong with me that they don't want to talk to me, that they don't think in the same way or they don't respond in the same way? And if you're not careful, you can personalize it about you. Mm. Actually, it's just the joy and wonder of having someone who's different sitting and helping you think about things differently. So where I open my mouth and think at the same time, having someone who reflects before they open their mouth can be a huge advantage at times. You know, so there is this piece in style as well.
Yeah.
That's massively important that we're working a lot on in Kimberly-Clark, particularly in our team, of making sure that we pull people in to the conversation if they wouldn't naturally come there, but also give them the space to do that and at the same time recognize that other people think in different ways.
That's right. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No,
right?
Not at all.
Again, we're expected. And when you've hit the diversity gains that y'all have hit, you're going to have even more diversity of opinion. That's part of the definition. So, but I love how you're training down even at the front line to appreciate and value and act on inclusivity. That's an outstanding best practice. Is that?
I would agree.
So, despite the challenges that everyone has in manufacturing and diversity, gender goal, you know, you name it, but is that a best practice? What you're seeing kind of break through some of the challenges?
I think we're seeing value out of helping our leaders understand how to lead better and get more out of their teams through the inclusion training. Mm. So it's not so much about the diversity, although it helps people feel comfortable right. within the teams, it's more about how to get more out of the team itself. So, and it's not, that training isn't just limited to the manufacturing space. We've just had a really big push in that space, but we certainly deliver that training across the organization to different teams who need more innovation, more creativity, or they're just, you know, sometimes it's teams that have to learn how to work together better and have better collaboration.
I think one of the things we've been really good at in KC is this unconscious bias work where, you know, you own as your development to understand unconsciously what are you biased about. And that comes from how you've been brought up. It's not something that you've done deliberately.
Right.
But being aware of it, you can then put in those processes to catch yourself and make sure that you're not delivering, particularly as you go up the leadership ladder. If you don't deal with that and understand that, then by default, without meaning to, you can close down some things or some people that you really would get value from.
What I find, and we all don't know what we don't know.
No, exactly.
Right? So these unconscious biases, we all have them. Changing gears kind of in this last segment, there's so much we could dive into. But what I admire about what you are doing and the gains you've made in diversity and across the board is you're doing it while the target's moving, right? A lot of organizations struggle to do it when they stay in the status quo, she's not being moved, you know, and it's still challenging. You're doing it while you're leading a supply chain transformation. If it's accurate, standing up Kimberly-Clark's first global formal supply chain, right, since 2015. So let's talk about transformation.
Mm-hmm.
I believe you're roughly 50% through.
Yeah.
The grandmaster.
I'm sure it won't. I'm sure we won't get away with just doing one.
It's not a finish line. It's not a finish line.
There is, but then there comes another start line. I think.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Well, tell us about some of the early wins that y'all have seen, and would love to go around the room.
You want me to go first?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I think that, gosh, there's a lot we've been doing. You're right, Scott. There's a lot we've been focusing on. The first thing we focused on was, you know, why are we here? So we're here to create value from source to shelf, really using that within KC. And then, you know, we talked about what does that look like? So we've done the why. What are we actually going to do? Well, we're going to partner with the business units to enable growth and value for KC, for the shareholders, for our customers and our suppliers, which is really that end-to-end piece. And then, well, how are we going to do it? Well, we're going to do it by using the global leadership team to develop the strategies. Then we're going to deploy them through the regions in a two-way process, and we're going to deliver them locally. And actually, well, what are we going to focus on then? Well, we're going to focus on, obviously, safety. That's a non-negotiable when you look at the area and the 30,000 people that we have within supply chain in KC. And then we're going to focus on service. We're going to focus, because actually without getting the service right with our customers and consumers, it's not really a lot of point. You're not really delivering what you should be doing. And that should be, you should be customer and consumer focused in your strategies in supply chain. We're going to focus on quality, because if we're safe, we also need to make sure we're making quality goods and services if we're going to bring essentials to everybody every day of their lives. Then cost, clearly, because that's a key part that the supply chain brings. And also cash in terms of inventory as an example, or even when you talk about DPO for procurement. And those have really been the things that we focused on. And what we've seen, do you want to have a go, anybody else? Because I can see I'm on a roll here.
It's your story.
Yeah. What we've managed to do halfway through, we set ourselves if you start with cost, which is where people naturally go, I think for supply chain, we've evolved our story to be so much more than cost-based. But we set ourselves a goal of delivering $2.5 billion back to the corporation over 5 years. Halfway through, thankfully, we're all still here because we're halfway through the delivery on that. So we're well over $1 billion in terms of what we can see that we've tangibly delivered over the last 2.5-3 years. Yeah, we're very proud of that. We're equally proud of the fact that we've improved our service by 20 percentage points over that time, which really matters, because clearly we need the product in the right place. We've brought in a metric that has a lot called Right First Time that goes right the way from our suppliers through to product on the shelf, be it virtual virtual or you know, physical, that we've improved by probably 10 percentage points, actually, and got to almost world-class, which means that then, of course, we have to up our target. But Mike Page, our quality head, will be pleased about hearing that on the radio, but there you go. And then what we've managed to do is get ahead of the game on inventory, and we're ahead of our plan, and in the last 3 years have reduced by nearly 5 days our inventory at a global level. So you can imagine the impact of that across the world for Kimberly-Clark. So, and the thing that I'm very most proud of, actually, is the team, because during that time we've also managed to continue to recruit people in both internally and externally from Kimberly-Clark and external companies to come and join the party, which is there is sleep that goes on, back to the earlier point. It's a lot of fun.
I was going to let that go. I wasn't going to touch that again.
Although I'm not feeling like I slept much this week, to be honest. I've been traveled around Latin America, but there you go. But there is this I think that helps us motivate and passion for what we do. And there's just an amazing group of leaders who are leading this transformation, who are there for each other, not afraid to challenge each other, but making sure it's fun at the same time.
Mm. Wow.
That's my baby.
I love the key points here that you're making right first time.
Yeah.
So I think I've got a hunch what that means. I think all of us do. But how do y'all define that exactly?
Okay, I'm going to hand that to Claire, because otherwise I'm going to take it.
Yeah, please, Claire.
We set up Right First Time to cover procure, you know, so the products that we're bringing in, are they of the quality that we would expect? Mm-hmm. Make, so as we're making product, are we producing the quality we would expect? Move, and so obviously as we're moving, the same. And then sell, so on the shelf. And I think we'll continue to expand that metric even to flow into design, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that metric has matured over time to really measure quality throughout the supply chain. And we think that that is incredibly important and one of the biggest value drivers that we can do in terms of our customers and our consumers.
Mm. And beyond the Right First Time, what's, in your words, or from your perspective, Claire, the biggest win thus far? I know Sandra laid out a lot of huge wins halfway through, but what's been the biggest win thus far, transformation-wise?
I would say that now we're really focusing on this integrated supply chain. So there's, you know, at the beginning, it's a lot about setting up the global network and, you know, establishing all of the functions that are part of the supply chain. And now we're really focused in on integrating it. So, you know, we've been talking a lot about service throughout the supply chain and how that stretches from procurement and how we, you know, ensure that our suppliers are bringing in products and delivering them on time at the best quality, how our factories produce products and, you know, according to their schedule to make sure we have what we need. Mm-hmm. And then obviously how we deliver those to our customers and get them on the shelves for our consumers. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, we are really focused on painting that integration picture and making sure people are valuing all of the pieces of the supply chain, because that's the only way that we can deliver the best products.
And I think one of the things we've done really well is also put logistics and planning on the map. So Shane and his team and working with the regions, we probably didn't talk about logistics and planning as being so hugely important across our supply chain. We've now, to the point that Claire's making around service being a key element of everything in the supply chain, we've now also talked about the backbone of what makes that happen and the role of logistics, owning the planning system right the way from the source back and or source forward. And what we do talk about is product flows source to shelf, technology and information, so data flows shelf back. Mm. So you can continue that loop of what you want to do and understand and make the right calls. So
love it.
And I guess I would like to give a little plug in for the talent that we've developed within the company, because of course we have all these great processes and focus on the delivery and results, but you know, we had a fragmented supply chain, and so we've really had to focus on getting that end-to-end supply chain mindset in the leaders. So we have a development program that we put our kind of senior director level leaders through to help them build their end-to-end supply chain mindset. So they are thinking about logistics and planning differently. So they're thinking about procurement and how we're working with our suppliers differently and quality of our product and, you know, just the value of leadership in supply chain. So I do think, you know, that developing leaders program is something that has helped reshape the thought process of our supply chain leaders at Kimberly-Clark.
How was supply chain seen, you know, kind of before the transformation, you know, in the executive room, maybe, Sandra? How was it seen then versus how is it seen now by Kimberly-Clark as a whole?
Yeah, I don't think it was. Supply chain wasn't seen. Manufacturing or product supply, as it was called, was, I think. And it was more about the mills, which are hugely important. But equally important is the procurement, logistics, quality, safety and sustainability elements of it. So it wasn't. You know, it was more cost. What cost can I get? And probably very focused on the mills, what we've been able to do, and also procurement in terms of, you know, the buying power that you have or don't have. I think what we've been able to do is start talking about the different levers, that not every year can you find the money in the same place or the service in the same place. You have to pull the levers in a different way, depending on what your inputs are or the environment you're operating in. So I think we've been able to shift that with the shift in the organization. Not there yet, because it takes time to shift a history, but I think that's probably supply chain in terms. Total.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a moving target, like Scott was saying earlier, right? When you think you have it, the market changes too.
Yeah.
You got to, you know, adjust those levers like you were saying.
You do.
So.
And if you talk about next generation supply chain, that's exactly where you need to go. It's that data-driven analytics at the same time as making sure you're being green, you're being speed to market's good. There's so many different things that come into that area as you start talking about next gen too.
Well, I like how y'all have made these gains. Sandra said earlier, you know, despite all of the diversity goals, it's still capability and performance. Mm. And you really pride yourselves on not compromising to make some of these gains. That's a really important comment to make. So let's kind of close with some good news. Because
you mean the rest wasn't good news?
Oh.
We've been trying our best here.
That's a great point.
Good point.
You know,
good point.
You told her to keep it positive.
Yeah, I'm doing my best.
Guilty as charged. I put these runners. Okay, we'll keep moving forward. So I mentioned the awesome organization, which is a really neat organization. Yeah, they had partnered with Gartner for a 2018 survey, and a lot of great data in this survey. But a couple of key findings that they identified. So in the 2018 survey compared to 2017, more respondents reported that supply chain led formal goals and initiatives to improve gender diversity. There were more of that, right? Which is outstanding. I love how you have it's tied to executive bonuses, right? Bottom line, so the top tiers of leadership lead and get serious and get beyond the lip service component of these types of important initiatives. They also, another key finding from the survey, which is what we're trying, a big part of our efforts, whether it's Apex Atlanta or Supply Chain Radio or what some of the chamber's doing, but increasing visibility of successful women leaders as role models is critical, not just to impact recruitment and retention, but also to impact advancement of women to senior levels. That's really important. So appreciate what y'all are doing. Appreciate your willingness to come out from your very busy schedules where you're getting plenty of sleep, but you're coming out and sharing your story. You know, a lot of companies your size and with global footprint, they're real careful about some of the things they put out there. But y'all, really appreciate y'all's transparency and what's going well and what's not going well. And I think there's a lot of as a father of two daughters, there's a ton of encouragement and optimism and what we're hearing today. So thank you, Sandra and Amy and Claire, for coming out. So on that note, we're going to kind of shift into some final notes. Lots of upcoming events here in the hashtag Supply Chain City bin.
Well, yeah.
You know what I'm about to ask you, right?
Yeah, I think it's coming. But go ahead.
Well, what's on your radar? What you know, as someone that is traveling through all the boroughs of Metro Atlanta, lots of different events. What's top of your radar here lately?
Well, I was in Toronto last week. We were talking about it before the show at the TIACA, International Air Cargo Association. They do their big cargo forum, their annual one, and this time it was in Toronto. I'd actually never been to Toronto before. A phenomenal place, first of all. It's an amazing city. I think it's a top four city in North America as far as population. So, wonderful place. Learned a lot there. I did not know a ton about air cargo beforehand. I had done a lot of it in the forwarding industry beforehand, but had not really met with a lot of the key stakeholders really within the industry. So very eye-opening experience there. I went with Hartsfield-Jackson Airport there. So had a lot of great meetings and all that good stuff. And it was a successful trip. Glad to be back though. Yep. Next week, we've got the Industrial IoT and Smart Cities World event, which will be Monday and Tuesday next week. So that is at the Hyatt Regency here in Atlanta. Mac actually will be on three different speaking sessions there at that event. So that'll be a good event with us. And actually, let's see, Point A is going to be there with us. And I think we've got a couple other companies. Four Kites will be there as well, as well as ThingTech. All three companies are co-sponsoring with us there. So, yeah, looking forward to that as a good event. And then FabTech is coming up in November. I think it's the 6th and 7th, I want to say, or 7th and 8th. That is the world's largest metal fabrication show here. So I'll be on a panel there giving an overview of kind of the state of manufacturing, if you will, in the U.S. So looking forward to some fun stuff coming up here pretty soon. So stay tuned.
All right, Ben, thanks. Will, what's on your radar?
Well, to be honest, Ben kind of stole mine. I was so fired up about IoT smart cities. That's what I was going to talk about, but that's okay.
Are you going?
Yes, I was thinking Tuesday would be the day.
Bring it on.
All right.
Bring it on.
Yeah. Over at the Hyatt. So I'm just focused on the candy supply chain with Halloween on Wednesday, you know, keeping that rolling, at least in my neighborhood.
So make sure you eat a lot because my pension's with M&M.
See?
My kids will, you'll have record payouts here.
Look at that.
Take care of that.
You know, we start that from probably just after Easter to make sure we've got enough.
I have heard that.
That was a Mars one. So,
Halloween's right around the corner. Interesting supply chain there. So on that note, Ben mentioned earlier our supply chain 101 initiatives, which really are geared towards, there's a lot of benefits I think we can all gain by having our kids, part of the next generation, understanding what goes on in a very fair and balanced way in supply chain, manufacturing, logistics, you name it. But we're going to be out in Newton County at Livingston Elementary School on October 29th and November 12th doing two sessions of Supply Chain 101, taking teams of volunteers into, this time, third graders, talking supply chain. So that'll be neat.
Shout out to David Byrne and his folks over there in Newton County.
Yeah, David Byrne, there's no shortage of big things going on out in Newton County, Three Wing Studios, the big pharmaceutical.
Shire.
Shire.
It's changed names a couple times, but just recently, I want to say Takeda Pharmaceuticals just acquired them, but it will remain Shire, though, from what I understand.
I'm glad you can keep track. I have not had enough ginkgo biloba.
Don't quote me on that. I know this. We're on a show right now, but let's just. I think that's who it is right now.
So a couple final notes here. Check out our new website, supplychainnowradio.com. Next up on Supply Chain Now Radio, we're going to be featuring Jeff Cashman this afternoon, CEO of Ally Commerce, Chris Barber in 2 weeks, CEO of Gray Orange Americas, which established our new U.S. headquarters here in Atlanta, I believe.
Ally Commerce, another backed by ATL company. So happy to welcome Jeff to the show. Also co-chair of Supply Chain Leadership Council as well.
I need to make that note. Show notes. Allison Giddens with Women in Manufacturing. I'm not sure if you are familiar with WIM. She helped founded the Georgia chapter. Allison's a great friend of the show. And Jason Moss, CEO of the Georgia Manufacturing Alliance, all on tap over the next few weeks. Lots of webinars. You can check those out at apexatlanta.org. We talked about Supply Chain 101. Joint APEX and ASQ event featuring Kia's Stuart Countess, who's a chief administrative officer over there. He's going to give us an automotive industry update on November 15th. And Ben, we can't wrap up the show, Ben and Will, and our Kimberly Clark team, without talking about the first annual Atlanta Supply Chain Awards on March 12th, 2019. Right?
Mark your calendars now.
Never too early to start thinking about
it. We've had a growing contingent of industry associations get on board that we've identified 11 awards, and we're trying to line up associations that are closely, you know, for example, ISM and procurement, WIM and the Manufacturing Excellence Awards, so on and so forth. So that continues to gain momentum. And want to, again, thank a home run team today, Sandra McQuillan, Chief Supply Chain Officer with Kimberly Clark. Claire Ughetto, Director of Supply Chain and Strategy, Supply Chain Strategy and Transformation with KC, and Amy Gray, Director of Supply Chain HR with Kimberly Clark. Thanks so much for taking time out. To our audience, thanks for joining us. If you want more information, you can check out APEX at apexatlanta.org. If you can, you can learn about our sponsor, Talent Stream, at talentstreamstaffing.com. And of course, you can always shoot us an email at info@apexatlanta.org if you have any questions or you want to learn more. Ben, Will, thanks. Great to collaborate again. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
Yes, sir.
And Sandra, Claire, and Amy, have a wonderful weekend. I hope to see you soon.
Thank you.
You too.